Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. And also, by the way, going live next Monday on WGOW out of Chattanooga. So we're looking forward to that. So we're in this topic right now, and I just labeled the first dipper for the triple dipper today. Is this called school choice is here? Because it is. It's Donald Trump has labeled it the civil rights issue of our lifetime. We have a national focus on it right now that we have not had to this level, I think, in that I can recall. And states, though, still have the say in getting it established. It's a matter of state law as to whether you're going to have school choice. Alabama has the Choose Act. Well, somebody who's been in the mix now for years on school choice is someone who I had the pleasure of getting to know when I was working in Montgomery in the state Senate, and that's Ryan Cantrell, who is the Vice President for Government Affairs for American Federation for Children, doing work everywhere on the question of school choice. He's on the phone right now. Ryan Cantrell, how are you doing?
Still doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Outstanding, man. Well, it's good to hear your voice, and thanks for making time for us today. Hey, listen, the Choose Act, it went live. I mean, people can app, and we're hearing right now that we're going to see like record-busting applications, like 2,800 on the first day. Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, listen, in some ways, this isn't a surprise. You know, Alabama is, you know, really excited about the program they passed this last year. But in some ways, we were a little bit behind the curve. I mean, we've had school choice bill that, you know, you were involved in helping pass back in 2013, but it was, you know, somewhat limited in scope and not a ton of families were eligible to participate. This opens the door wide open for families across the state to you know, have an option for their child's education. And so the demand that we're seeing now really comes as no surprise. Like you said, you know, nearly 3,000 families, almost 5,000 students total, you know, applying in the first 24 hours of the application opening really just shows the demand for more options and more say in your child's education. And so it's really exciting. I think we're going to continue to see that grow. As you know, it's a $100 million program. I'd be shocked if this thing wasn't filled up long before the deadline if we didn't have that number of applications needed before the application deadline closes in April.
So the application closes at a certain time. That's right. You can't just apply every day of the year forever and ever. Amen.
That's right.
And my recollection, and I think I saw it in one of the articles I've got in front of me, is that it is income-based for the first 2 years, and in 2027,
That's
they
right.
open it up for everybody. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. So for, you know, the first 2 years, and you know, we at AFC deeply believe, you know, we want as many families to be eligible as possible. But at the same time, we really want to make sure that those families that need it the most are prioritized. And that's exactly what the legislature did when they designed the Choose Act by saying, listen, in the first 2 years, you have to be under a certain income threshold for a family of four. For your listeners' sake, you know, that income threshold is right around $93,000 a year. One thing that is worth noting, too, though, is, you know, if you're a family making $100,000, your adjusted gross income is likely not $100,000.
Right.
And so just because your family may have a slightly higher income than the threshold, you should still apply and you should still make sure that you're not eligible due to your deductions and everything else that goes into to the taxes and all that goes into this. So, but yeah, for the first 2 years, limited to families that meet certain income requirements. But then in year three, it opens wide up to everyone in the state of Alabama, which is really exciting.
And I know that there's different things they can use it for. It can be applied with a slightly less amount to homeschooling. It can be applied to education expenses.
Yep.
It can be applied to transition to a private school. But where do you anticipate the most usage going? Are you seeing a trend nationwide on where people use these ESAs the most?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the first handful of years, we always see private school tuition being the primary expense that's being paid, which is normal. That's what parents are most aware of and are most familiar with. But what we see is over time, and Florida is a good example of this, where they've had an ESA program in place for a long time now, is that over time you see families starting to to branch out from just that private school setting. So you may they may start using it for a portion of it for private school. They may use it for tutoring. They may use it for at home curriculum as well. And so, like you said, in Alabama, you know, a family that wants to move their kid to a private school gets $7,000. Homeschool families get $2,000 per student, up to $4,000 a family. And again, this is a big deal for families across Alabama who, may not have the resources or, may not be able to afford to send their kid to a private school right now, but know that the environment that they're in is not beneficial for their child. And so I think, what we're going to end up seeing is not only are parents able to choose the school that works best for them, but we're going to see educational attainment quickly rise among these families who are able to move their child to another educational environment.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you mentioned Florida. I mean, they've had ESAs, Education Savings Account, which is what this is, in place for a while now. And guess what? They did not collapse the public education system, did they?
No, I mean, you look at what's happening in Florida. What's interesting is, in Florida, nearly half the students in the state, nearly half the families in their state attend a school outside of their zoned traditional public school. That could be a charter school. That could be a private school. That could be a home school. That could be another public school that's outside of their zoned district school system. But what Florida has done is they have said, listen, we aren't going to go all in on one specific education type. We want families to be able to have access to a broad number of educational resources and figure out what works best for their kid. And that's what we need to be doing. If our goal is to educate children, then it shouldn't matter what building they go to. It shouldn't matter what environment they're in. What should matter is how well they're doing and what they're able to accomplish. And that's what we want for all of our kids. That's what I want for my kids. And parents know best at the end of the day of what's going to work best for their children.
Oh, absolutely. They're the right ones to make the choice. Well, listen, let me ask you this about, so Alabama's Choose Act is in place. We're seeing the first applications, they're flooding in. But I feel like we're seeing a national trend. Like, I even got an article here, where'd it go? Somewhere in my stack, that Trump's appointment or nomination of Linda McMahon to the U.S. Department of Education, she's an absolute school choice advocate. So we're looking at a national level momentum. Am I right in saying that?
Oh, totally. I mean, you look at the movement across the country over the last 3 or 4 years. Since 2021, we've had 12 states that have enacted universal school choice programs, which means every family in the state is eligible. We have more states that are talking about it this year. You have Texas that's going to likely pass a universal school choice program. And what's funny, what's great about Texas is once Texas passes their universal program, hopefully this year, half the students in the country, 50% of the students in the country, will be eligible for a school choice scholarship.
Wow.
That's a huge, that's a huge movement from where we were just 3 or 4 years ago. And so this is a national movement. You have other states like Idaho and Tennessee, Georgia and South Carolina, states across the country. You even have purple states like Pennsylvania talking about passing broad-based school choice programs. And I think at the end of the day, you're going to see not just states looking at this, but I think this year you could see the federal government decide, hey, we need to figure out a way to make sure that some of these families in deep blue states that we know are not going to pass school choice, we need to make sure they have an option too. I think there's a really good chance the federal government this year in the Congress passes and the president signs a school choice law at the federal level.
Wow. That would be huge. And then go ahead and fold up the Department of Education while you're at it. That'd be great. School choice for everybody.
At that point, we've put the power in the family. So
that'd be a whole new day. Well, listen, you've been in the fights. I mean, I know you have because I was there with you on some of it. But you've been in the fights where the teachers' union resists, and yet they never bring up an argument that talks about what's best for the kids. They always bring up an argument that talks about why they want more for the system and about money and about pay. But they never talk about the kids. And that's really what this is about the kids.
Well, and there's never enough money either.
Oh, yeah.
In Texas, you know, we talked about Texas a second ago. It's a perfect example of this, where this last year, Governor Abbott called the legislature into a special session to try to pass school choice. What they were going to do is they were going to enact universal school choice, give every family in the state the option to participate in a school choice program. They were also going to give an additional $4 to $7 billion to the public school system.
Wow.
And the teachers union said, absolutely not. We are not, we do not want, we do not want money, that money, if it means that we're going to pass school choice. So for a group that constantly talks about not having enough money for public education, you had a really good opportunity to get a, you know, a huge sum of money into the public school system, and they turned it down because they just simply oppose giving parents an option. And so there is no number that's going to be high enough for them. This is an issue for them that they are not going to budge on. And so it's incumbent on legislators across the country to push back on that and say, no, listen, we've funded public education. We will continue to fund public education. We can do both. We can fund public education at a high level. We can pay teachers what they deserve to be paid, and we can give families a choice in their in where they send their child to school.
It's exactly right. It's like an all of the above. It's like an energy policy. All of the above may actually be the best policy. I can remember being in debates. Actually, it wasn't even a debate. I was on the floor of the Senate one time, and I think it was Senator Linda Coleman Madison, who was a Democrat in Alabama. And she was at the podium, and she was talking about the budget, and she said, we don't adequately fund education in Alabama. And I went to the podium, and I said, can you tell me what number means adequate funding? And she couldn't, because they never know. All they know is they want more, and that's just not the way life works.
Well, and in Alabama in particular, I mean, you look over the last 10 years, and you look at how much our education trust fund budget has grown.
Oh, yeah.
But what a lot of people don't realize is over that same period of time, the number of students in Alabama, public school students, has actually decreased. And so we have increased funding over the last 10 years to record levels, while at the same time, we have less students than we did when we started at that, you know, the same 10-year period. So it really is incredible to me that that we, you know, like you said at the very beginning, so focused on money, less focused on what's best for a student. And that's what we've got to get to.
Totally agree. Hey, Ryan Cantrell, Vice President for Government Affairs at American Federation for Children, thanks for your work in this arena, and we'll keep you on speed dial, all right?
Hey, it sounds great. Thanks for having me on, Phil.
Thanks, Ryan. I met some quality people during my time in Montgomery, and that was one of them. All right, we're taking a break. We'll take a break right now. We'll come right back. I got some text messages to catch up on. Oh, yeah, I do. And y'all call in if you want to, 833-687-4448. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.